You are listening to WBRO 89.9 on your FM dial. Scott Mitchell's Let the Bible Speak is on, and we have our guest today is Mike Bozeman.
Very good. Good morning, everybody. We have, again, like Matt just said, Mike Bozeman with us here. This is Scott Mitchell with Let the Bible Speak, our 24th show, I think. Theron keeps count. I can't believe it's been that long. And I work with the church down the road at El Bethel. Been there since two Mays ago, so a little over a year now. And we're just trying to study the Bible and get back to the basics and understand what it says. And that's our intent. And if you're so inclined to visit, we will start Bible study at 9:30 in the morning. We'll be in Genesis. And that's been a good study so far. We just started that last week. And Wednesday at 9:30 for study and 10:30 for worship. And we'll be talking about the Bride of Christ in the morning. And Wednesday we meet at 7 at the little building over the hill. And we are studying 1 John. And we should be in chapter 2 on Wednesday. But that, folks, all we want to do is study the Bible and spend time with it and understand it. And we're going to talk about a topic this morning that's kind of... It may be a hard to pin down, but I'm going to have Mike Bozeman introduce himself, tell where he's from and what he's doing. How long have you been preaching? You told me this the last time, I don't remember.
I don't know, since about 1989.
So a while. So,
just a little while.
So combined, well, we have a combined total of a long time plus one. So why don't you tell us about yourself, brother?
Well, I'm just a little bit north of El Bethel. We're in New Salisbury. Mm-hmm. There's a little church in New Salisbury just off of 135, just about a mile north of 64 and 135. Yep. And that's it's just a group of Christians who want to study the Bible. So we're not anybody special in this world, but we are people who are serious about the Lord. And we just want to invite people to come and be a part of that if you're interested in studying. So if you happen to be north of El Bethel, too far to go there, then we'll feel free to come and
study
with us.
Give phone numbers out and whatnot as we can. I ran into somebody at McDonald's this morning. Her name's Yvette. She kind of helps Sean run the station. So if you're on here and you know who Yvette is, she said, tell everybody good morning and hello, and she'll be back soon. But she's dealing with some personal stuff. It's been hard for her, and that those people out there know what that is. But she said, tell everybody how, so I want to make sure and pass that along. She's a sweet lady. She's the one that originally showed me how to operate the station. She has Sean help her. And Sean, thank you, if you're listening, for giving us this opportunity to reach out to people with the truth. And that's all we want. Again, that's all we want to do. I called Mike earlier in the week and asked if he wanted to be on, and he said sure. And I said, what do you want to talk about? And he said, well, I did a lesson recently on gambling. I said, let's do it. And so that we're going to talk about today. Now, when we talk about gambling, let's talk about everything, not everything, but some things this thing entails, so people know, you know. So we've talked about office pools this morning.
Right.
And we've talked about, even you said, you know, hanging your sheets out is a gamble. Go ahead and talk about, just kind of give us a background as what you're going to talk about as far as introducing
it. I first started thinking about this because we were on our way back from Pennsylvania a few weeks ago. We'd taken my daughter up there, and we stopped at the convenience store to get some gas, and we went inside, and there was one of those machines over in the corner where, you know, if you put your quarter in, it kind of finds its way down, and it'll land on a landing where there are all these other quarters that people put in.
Oh.
And it kind of comes out and in, and it pushes the quarters, and if it pushes them just far enough, it makes them fall to the next landing down, which encompasses a million other quarters. And if it pushes those out farther, then all these quarters fall down, and you could walk away with a lot of quarters for putting in one.
Or
you could walk away with nothing.
Yeah.
And we are talking about that. My son said, wow, it's like Las Vegas right here in a convenience store. You don't even need to go to Nevada.
Yeah.
And so it just made me start thinking, you know, and get a discussion with them.
Yeah.
About those different opportunities to play those games.
Yeah.
And so I just made a list of things. I just thought I'd ask the question, what do you think about that kind of way, those kind of games? You know, we have so many opportunities, especially in this area, whether it's the lottery, just about in every state, or the Kentucky, you know, the Derby, which is just across the river.
And in
companies, people have the NCAA brackets that they play. Yeah. They have, like you mentioned, there's fantasy football league pools, there's Powerball pools. And the question is, you know, what do you think about that if you're a Christian? How do you look at that?
And so what I've been told by people, and You don't want to condemn all gambling, and we'll talk about that in a minute as far as what that means. But they'll say to me, well, it's just entertainment. You go out and spend $20 to eat, I'm going to spend $20 doing this, and this is so I'm going to entertain myself. Well, is that, is we need to talk about whether that's appropriate or not. And all, folks, we, you know, and I say this a lot of times on this show, I don't expect this 1 hour to change people's lives.
Right.
But what I hope is it would cause people to study.
Right,
and look
exactly
at what the Bible does say. And call, you know, if you want to call in, number is 81. The phone did work because Sean called this morning, 812-365-9864, if I remember right. And give us a call and, you know, tell us what you think. And that's you know, as now, I'll be honest, we're talking about this topic. A non-Christian isn't going to care a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
They've got big, we've got bigger fish to fry for with them as far as, but the idea of, are we violating a Bible principle will apply to everybody.
Right.
Is what we're doing something that God would want us to do? And that's the question we have to ask ourselves on everything.
Yeah, and I'll go in with what you said a while ago. The way the culture looks at it,
mm-hmm,
is, at least in two ways, culture says, well, it's just entertainment. It's just, yep, something I like to do for fun. That's, yep, all it is. I don't mean any harm by it. I just like to do it for fun. Or culture will say that it's for a good cause.
Yeah.
And there are just a lot of things that that are done in through gambling that end up having some benefit, I guess you could say, in culture. There's a like you were saying, there's a lot of there's a lot of things like the Kentucky lottery. There's proceeds that come from that. At least a portion of that is devoted to education.
Yeah.
And so why would I not, if I do that, if I play that, well, I'm actually helping somebody because some child,
yeah,
is going to get,
yeah,
a student loan through the Kentucky Lottery and he's going to go, yeah, to college.
You know, and we have to, on that line, we have to look at, it's kind of like drinking.
Mm-hmm.
You say, well, I can drink and it, I'm not hurting anybody, but it's something that can lead to something a whole lot worse, like addiction and alcoholism and destroyed families, and looking at it that way. What about the dude or the dude, you know, I go, the lines I stand in the longest at the gas station are lottery ticket lines.
Yeah.
If I stand in line and ring with the gas station, it's for people buying, it's even more so, yeah, than even cigarettes. We're standing in line buying lottery tickets. What about these people that are betting everything they've got,
yeah,
hoping to get the big score? And we're feeding that part of them. What about that? And we need to consider all sides of this and what we're actually,
yeah,
a part of. If we can step back and look at the big picture of it all,
yeah,
is this something that God? And I'm wanting people to think about these things, and look at the Bible and see what it does say. So I,
right,
keep interrupting you, but go ahead.
No, that's okay. But it wasn't, you didn't go the direction I was thinking about. But yeah, even in some of those things that you mentioned, alcoholism and, mm-hmm, drinking. Do you know there? Have you ever heard of something called a syntax? Not a syntax like in grammar,
mm-hmm,
but a syntax is, yeah, in like the government has a tax on certain. How would you put it? Certain kind of things that society offers that they consider are not healthy for society.
Okay,
and so they tax cigarettes and alcohol, because they don't think those are things that are good for society, and then some of the proceeds from that go to, or gambling, there's a sin tax on that then they use toward various things, or even on prostitution.
Yeah.
You know that they tax, you know, prostitution's legal in Nevada. So, you know, again, when people make, it'll be a temptation when we're thinking about gambling to say, well, it's just for fun. And or it goes to provide good things in society, actually,
yeah,
some of their business. But, you know, all things that are entertaining are not necessarily right.
Yeah.
And all things that provide for good causes also do not justify,
yeah,
that.
So
we want to think about this, yeah, as we, those kind of arguments as we go through this.
Right? So now that we've blown this can of worms up.
Right.
And, you know, it's out there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had some thoughts, but I knew you had your own, so I put some together. But let's start. When you started this discussion, where did you start when you did this lesson?
Well, I started just saying, let's evaluate this more on principle than just condemning a label.
Okay.
It's very easy to just say, well, all gambling is wrong. and that's not really a fair thing to do. I'd rather look at this in terms of the heart condition and about whether there's an attitude that needs to be considered. Not everything that can be called gambling is a reflection of a bad heart.
Yeah.
Like I was saying, kind of in a funny way, but you know, your wife goes out to hang laundry. I don't know about you, but in Harrison County, it's kind of a cool thing to go out and hang your laundry outside. Yeah. But your wife goes out and looks at the clouds and said, I think it's going to rain. Nah, I don't think so. Let's go ahead and put them out anyway. Yeah. Well, she just took a gamble.
Yeah.
But that's not a reflection of a bad heart condition.
Maybe an unwise decision, hey. But not a heart condition.
Yeah. So let's be careful. Or, you know, when we said inside, there's some things that people condemn it that I don't think is wrong. There are never things that don't make gambling wrong. For example, it's a game of chance.
Yeah.
You know, we play games in our home. I don't know about you, but we play Farkle all the time, and that's a roll of the gap.
I use Farkle at school, so my kids use math to add up the score. We play that a lot.
That's right. So. I don't think that those are reflections of bad heart conditions. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And
we're not gaining or losing anything by playing Farkle.
True.
But I'm just thinking maybe out of place there. But
even in general life, provides all kinds of opportunities for risks that we have to take. Just if we got in our car today and came here.
Like driving down the road.
That's right. You're taking a risk to do that. Or if you put your money in a 401k or invest in the stock market, there's a chance, even if you are conservative in that something could happen.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that would be considered sinful. Like that reflects a bad heart condition. There could be some heart condition in the way people use their money in those kind of investments. But I don't think intrinsically that's wrong. And but at the same time, I always think about this in terms move toward principle, especially as it involves Christians.
Yeah.
Let's read a passage first of all. I'll start moving toward the Bible, especially.
Sure, good idea.
First Peter chapter 2. I just want to read a passage there.
I know we've got some comments on my phone, but I can't read them from here. So
okay.
I don't know what they are, or if they're positive or negative or anything else.
1 Peter chapter 2. Let's read. And what I want to say to start with is that when people become Christians, there will be some life and thinking changes that you have to expect to be involved. It's a basic fundamental thing.
Yeah.
In verse 9, he's going to differentiate between the world and Christians in this letter. And here's what he says. He says, you're a chosen race. Talking about these Christians. Yeah. You're a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light.
Yeah.
Now, what I want us to focus on is that these people were called out of something and into something. When you become a Christian, you're called out of darkness. You're called into God's light. Now, I just had to think about in our culture, and we'll talk about the culture here in Peter's day, that how many things sometimes we decide what position we're going to take on those, whether we think they're okay to do or not, based on, we just say, well, I don't see anything wrong with it. And that's just that can be as deep as it goes. I don't see anything wrong with it. Mm-hmm. And you think about that. I want you to think about culture today, how much our culture influences us, how many of the things when we say, well, I don't see anything wrong with it, might be just a reflection of what our culture has taught us.
Mm-hmm.
And in Peter's day, here's what culture taught them. Look in chapter 4 and verse 3. He says, for the time has already passed. The time already passed is sufficient for you to have carried out the desire of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, abominable idolatries, and all this. They're surprised that you don't run with them in the same excess of dissipation, and they malign you.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, culture had taught them that those things were okay.
Yeah.
Sensuality, lust, and drunkenness. If you had asked those guys in Peter's day, they'd have said, well, I don't see anything wrong with that.
You know, since you said that, I had a family member get married.
Okay.
This is weird. And just in terms of culture. And the husband immediately started cheating on the wife.
Wow.
And he told his father-in-law he said he did not know it was wrong.
Yeah. Sure.
How in the world?
Yeah.
He just assumed it was just what everybody did.
Yeah.
And so that same cultural idea, that's where he was. That's where, I think my computer just died. No, it didn't. But it doesn't matter anyway. But that cultural thing there, that's what everybody is expected and expecting.
That's right.
You know, and that's so that I think. Really? That's where the culture, for him, that's where his culture was.
Right. It almost says why the Bible is not something that's ancient and out of date. I mean, the same thing that characterized people in Peter's day is us. I mean, people exactly. There was a guy that I know that's a Christian who told me before he started reading the Bible, he had no motive whatsoever to marry the lady that he's now married to. He said, I was just going to live with her. He says, just a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a moral question for him.
No.
And he had just, because culture had taught him, you know. And so, you know, again.
Well, today culture says you take a test drive.
Yeah, that's right.
To make sure it's going to be a good fit before you do. And that, I understand. I mean, I come from that kind of background. I understand that.
Yeah.
But the principle, going back to Bible principle, what do God's principles teach us?
Right. And in Peter's day, he says, you are called out of darkness.
Yeah.
So there's some kind of change that we should expect to take place as Christians when we think about these different things. Even people who are very religious had to make changes. When Peter preached on Pentecost, he said to Jews who were very religious and who read the Bible all the time, he said, you need to repent and be baptized, every one of you, in the name of Jesus Christ. Yeah. So he even expected religious people to have to be making changes.
Yes.
So my point is, when we address subjects of gambling or whatever other kind of topics you want to talk about, as opposed to saying, well, I don't see anything wrong with it, which might be just the reflection of our culture, we need to say, does the Bible have anything to say about that?
Yes. And that's what we did on everything we do.
Yeah.
In every aspect.
Yeah.
I think that's right. You know, I asked my wife last night, I said, what's your biggest issue with gambling? And she said, well, I think it takes us away from the things we're supposed to be thinking about.
Okay.
And that's why I didn't ask her anymore. I thought, well, okay, that's that, you know, where is our mind? What is our thinking like? You know, this the risk thing, what would Jesus do kind of thing. Uh-huh. We got to think about those things as well. So go ahead with your notes. I don't want to distract you.
No, you're good. No, I'm listening. Right ahead, that's good. Good thoughts. So, again, we can ask, what does culture say? And we can let that be our primary influence. Or we need to ask the question, you know, well, what is there anything the Bible might say? And again, I want to talk more about the principle. I forgot how you put that. You wrote something about it on your little Ephesians passage back up there. But that sometimes it is an attitude or it is a condition of heart that leads us to do certain things. I'd like us to start in the book of Exodus, if you don't mind.
Oh, that's fine.
To talk about a certain principle that I think it has to at least brought to the forefront and discussed when we do different things. What kind of motivation is behind what we do? Exodus chapter 20, verse 17, when God had Moses bring the law and the covenant to the people.
By the way, folks, if you're listening, you don't have a Bible on your lap, get your Bibles.
All right,
this is kind of like an open forum Bible study. So get your Bibles. You want me to read 17?
Yeah.
I'm reading from English Standard Version, so if it reads a little differently, that's why. It's not different, just there are different versions out there. But it says, you shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male servants, or his female servants, or his ox, or his donkey, or anything that is your neighbor's. Like a Ford pickup truck, for instance, today. Maybe not a donkey, but a John Deere tractor.
Okay.
All right, so.
So obviously the key word that we want to look at is the idea of coveting.
Yep.
And in that case, this word coveting is talking about an intense desire for something that really isn't yours.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that earlier he had said, you shall not commit adultery. And earlier he said that you shall not steal. Those are actual acts of things.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the word covet here, he's saying you shall not covet your neighbor's house or his wife, or covet his donkey or anything else.
Yeah.
In other words, you know, the having of the thing itself begins in the heart.
Yeah, which is a condition of the heart you were talking about earlier. That's different than the act, but it's still...
It's wrong.
Yeah.
In this case, even though it's an intense desire, it's a desire that God said is wrong.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people say, well, I didn't steal anything. Well, I didn't ever have sex with his wife. That's right. But God looks before that, something more internally.
Yeah.
And so he's looking at our heart. And so at least as we think about this subject of gambling, you need to ask yourself the question, could it be that the gambling, the external act, in some way reflects the intense desire of the heart that God says is covetous.
By the way, it's about 10 till. If you're just joining us, this is Scott Mitchell's Let the Bible Speak.
Yeah.
We're talking about gambling this morning. Numbers 812-365-9864. If you have any questions or comments you want to make, the phones do ring. Sean Scott called in this morning, so I know they work. Even if we can't get you on there, we can take your call. So, anyway, just want to welcome you for just joining us, and certainly those on Facebook, we're thankful for you as well. How many there are? I think our record's been 10 at one time, maybe, but it's always a different 10. So,
okay,
you know, we'll get past that at some point. But just talking about gambling and is it wrong? Is it, what do we need to consider? And when we're doing these different activities, and you know, is there a Bible principle we're violating? That's kind of where we are. So carry on, brother.
Right. Well, and when Jesus in his day talked to people, I'm just looking in Mark chapter 7, mm-hmm. when Jesus talked to the people in his day about things that they were, they appeared very religious. They everything they did would have given you the idea that they were very religious people.
Yeah.
But in Mark chapter 7, Jesus dealt with something deeper that he was looking at than just what they did externally. And he says down around verse 20, he says, that which proceeds out of the man is what mm-hmm. defiles a man. He says, for from within, out of the heart, proceed the evil thoughts and fornications and thefts and murders and adulteries and deeds of coveting and wickedness and evil as deceit. All mm-hmm. these things proceed from within and defile the man. So again, I think as we address the subject, without being just directly condemning the external activity, I want us to look back behind it and at least be raising the question about whether something is going on in our heart
yeah.
that God would not be pleased with, whether the activity itself on the outside, when we get to that, is wrong or not. The yeah. inside, we have to start yeah. looking at.
And that goes to everything that we do.
Sure. Sure.
I mean, if we stop and help somebody with a flat tire, and we do it because we want people driving by to see me out there changing the helping this poor lady with a flat tire, you know.
Right.
Why stop?
Yeah.
That's the wrong motive. That whole thing, that this goes to that concept, what you're talking yeah. about, the motive of the heart, we need to look at everything that we do.
Yeah.
And so that had nothing to do with necessarily with everything to do with gambling, had everything to do with everything else. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, look at one other. Now turn over to another place. And some of this is a word study. We're not going to talk yeah. about different. But look in Luke chapter 16.
Luke 16.
This is another word that's used that's...
Now don't forget to speak up for the Facebook people. We don't have our mics. So just in case, right, I don't think...
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to look up.
Luke 16?
Yeah, Luke 16, chapter 16, verse 14. Jesus was addressing people, some of the very, very religious people in mm-hmm. his day. And he says, verse 14, now the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, were listening to all these things, and they were scoffers at him. Mm-hmm. I don't know, probably most people don't use King James Version, but if you have a King James Version, one of the old ancient versions there, if you read that, it would say Pharisees who were covetous were listening to all these things and were scoffing at him.
Mm-hmm.
And the word there that he uses is a word that means silver lovers. It's a word that means it's Phil, which we know Philadelphia is like the lovers of brotherly love.
Yeah.
But it's Phil and Arguus, which is the word for silver.
Okay.
So it's lovers of silver. So these are silver lovers. And
okay.
he calls them covetous, which, you know, again, this is a word that's repeated a lot of times in the New Testament. Just one other, and then we'll...
Oh, sure.
But in 2 Timothy chapter 3, he talks about the nature of their society. He said, for men, verse 2, 2 Timothy 3, 2, for men will be lovers of self and then lovers of money. Same word there. And so, again, as you look at the activity,
mm-hmm.
you need to ask the question, could it be reflective of a heart that has, as it's at the root, a love and a mm-hmm. passion for money?
Can I throw a verse in?
Yes.
This is what I'm thinking of. Sure. I was thinking about this morning. 2 Corinthians 1, verse 12.
Okay.
Along that line of what is our intent? It says, for our boast is this, that the testimony of our conscience, that we behaved in the world with simplicity and godly sincerity. not by earthly wisdom, but by the grace of God, and supremely so towards you. So this, we behaved in the world with simplicity and godly sincerity.
Okay.
If we balance that, if we take that verse and say, okay, why am I doing this? Am I doing this out of a godly sincerity in anything we do?
Okay.
And by kind of ask why, it'll help us, I think. If that's our standard.
Yours says simplicity.
Yeah, which is your saying?
Mine says in holiness and godly sincerity.
Okay.
That's kind of interesting because, again, if you're asking yourself, holiness is a reflection of the nature of God.
Mm-hmm.
Have us having his nature. So you're asking yourself if what I'm doing would reflect his nature in what I'm doing. Would be a good.
That's interesting. Anyway, just kind of the idea, that concept of why do we do things, or what are people seeing when we do things, or what are we part of, and does it reflect that?
Yeah.
That concept of our lives. It just kind of struck me as I was studying through this last night. But anyway, carry on, brother.
Well, let's look at one other passage. Staying in the Corinthian letter, go back to chapter 1 Corinthians chapter 5. In some places this word, again, we're talking about the principle of covetousness or lovers of money, and it appears in chapter 5 and verse 10 and 11, and it's a different word than the last word we looked at in Luke chapter 16, but it means to make increase, the basic word.
Oh, okay.
All right, so he says here in verse 10, verse 9, I wrote you in my letter not to associate with immoral people. I did not at all mean with the immoral people of this world, nor with the covetous and the swindlers, or with idolaters, for then you'd have to go out of the world. The word there that he uses is the word covetous means, and this is, I always like to take different versions just to read them to see how they would be translated. And in the Amplified version, it says the greedy graspers and the cheats.
the greedy graspers and the cheats. I like that. So mine just says greedy, but okay, I like that greedy graspers thing. That's interesting.
Now, this is the word that usually when we think about somebody who's covetous, we usually our word we wouldn't use that in our everyday language, not too often, but we would use the word the greedy.
Yeah.
So here are the people who are. They are always trying to make increase.
Yeah.
They're eager to gain. And it's interesting that this word that we're talking about, covetous, appears always in the context of a lot of unsavory characters. I mean, he shows up here with people who are immoral and drunkards and swindlers and revilers and idolaters. I mean,
greedy graspers. I'm going to get a t-shirt.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's interesting.
So, this, it's interesting though that I think, like you said at the beginning of the, that this is something that sometimes people have a hard time putting their finger on. They have a hard time dealing with.
Well, and the reason is they're not looking at them in terms of these other activities. They don't see it as being greedy grasping.
Yeah.
It's just entertainment.
That's right.
I'm not, when I lose, I don't, it doesn't matter. I think that's why it kind of creates a gray area, but I interrupted your thought. I'm sorry.
No.
But
that, I'm good listening. That's good.
But it's kind of like, well, how do we grab this thing? And, what is it we're holding on to?
Well, and especially when we try to evaluate ourselves, I think it's very hard to be honest with what is driving us in our hearts.
Yeah. It's probably the hardest thing for us to do.
It sure is. And the interesting thing is when that appears in this chapter 5, it's one of the things that's put in a list of things that people in a church can withdraw. It's a discipline. Somebody can be disciplined for that in a church. And I thought, well, have I ever been in a church where someone's actually been withdrawn from for covetousness?
Mm-hmm.
Where there's ever been any action taken against a member because they are greedy?
Or they're so overtly covetous and greedy we can see it.
Right. Now, I mean, the very...
that kind of thing.
Well, and the very, the very fact that he puts that in here, and it's just one of the few sins he actually lists, suggests that it's got to be objectively observable enough that you could do that.
Yeah.
But many people would say, well, that's so subjective. I mean, how would you ever...
And but it's kind of like if somebody is coveting somebody else's wife or husband, we can't necessarily see it.
Right.
Until their action's taken.
Yeah.
And we have to judge the fruit.
Yeah.
But there has to be action.
But it's interesting that he talks about covetous, which is the desire of the heart, and it seems like that it must be.
There's got to be some observable or something has to be seen.
Yeah. So I wonder if the problem is not as much a problem of us not being able to recognize greediness or whatnot if we see it, as we're afraid that we might find that we're hypocritical if we do something about it.
It's top of the hour. It's 10 o'clock. Matt, do you have the announcement?
Yes, sir.
Then we're fulfilling law here. Go ahead, Matt.
You are listening to Scott Mitchell's Let the Bottle Speak on WBRO 89.9 FM, broadcast from beautiful Marengo, Indiana.
Thank you very much, brother. So anyway, that's halfway done now, and we just barely scratched the surface of this creature we're dealing with. So I don't have much. I don't know where you're going.
You go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I'm just wondering. Let's say we've got somebody that says, "Well, I'm not gambling because I want stuff. It's just entertainment." What aspect of this, I think, would you approach them with in terms of looking at the big picture and what they're actually involved in and what they're doing? What are they feeding outside of that, kind of idea? It's not because when we start this, we just buy a lottery ticket once a month just for fun. Just see what happens. It's just see what happens. Or whatever. Maybe I go to the casino. I've been there twice. I've won $50. Big deal. But they don't go by there. They're not addicted. They're not. How do we approach that with those people?
Well, I would probably look at a passage in 2 Corinthians. Yeah. So if I can just go back to the Bible one more time this.
And I think one more time.
I think this might be helpful.
Yeah, here's why I bring this. I was talking to a guy the other day about drinking, social drinking.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, well, here's the problem I have with that.
Okay, yeah.
Is that alcoholism begins with the first drink.
Mm.
And if I never take the first drink, I don't have to worry about alcoholism
because
I'm not going to become an alcoholic if I don't start.
Mm.
So if in terms of that idea, and maybe, that's why I'm thinking, well, how does this, could that fit in the same conversation? And it may not. I'm just kind of throwing that out, seeing if that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
And I may have been, maybe I misspoke when I said that to him. But it's kind of that whole concept of what's the big picture we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead.
Well, one of the big part of the big picture is, and you may have mentioned this when we were first talking, is that Jesus said, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Love your neighbor as yourself." That's the second greatest commandment.
John 13:34-35. In that area, he says, "Love as I've loved you."
Yeah.
Our concept. Yeah. Yeah.
So, thinking about our relationship to other people as it involves these different things, I want to read another verse in 2 Corinthians that has to do with our topic that we were mentioning earlier about covetousness. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 9, and verse 5.
Yep.
He talked about, in this context, Paul is talking to a group about their promise to help another group of Christians who were suffering some neediness, and they were going to send money to help them out. And they had not; these guys hadn't made good on their promise. And he said, "So I thought it necessary to urge the brethren that they would go on ahead of you and arrange beforehand your previously promised bountiful gift, so that the same would be ready as a bountiful gift and not affected by covetousness." Now, it's interesting that the idea is, and this is another way you could read that. This is another version. He says, as a matter of a, not bountiful, but a generous gift,
mm-hmm.
not affected by grudgingly given, or not, the American Standard Version, not affected by extortion. That is when somebody wrings it out of you. They're kind of force you to do something against your will. So you see a little bit of a different nuance in this. Now, if you'll turn one other verse with me, then I think this is zeroing in on our topic.
Sure.
2 Corinthians 12.
I've got this.
Verse 17 and 18.
Yeah.
This is the same word about greediness and covetousness. It says in verse 17, "Certainly I have not taken advantage of you through any of those whom I have sent to you, have I? I urged Titus to go, and I sent the brother with him. Titus didn't take any advantage of you, did he? And we didn't conduct ourselves in the same spirit and walk in the same steps." In other words, he didn't use that as an opportunity for himself to gain off of you, to take advantage of you. And that's what that's one of the definitions of the word of covetousness is to make a gain.
Yeah. By the way, I accidentally lied. I had another, 2 Corinthians 12 had another verse. I said, I've got that one. I didn't have this verse. I just want to be honest about that. But keep going there. But
well, so let's think about that gambling as the idea of taking advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's certainly tied in with the word of covetousness, even as it's written right here in this passage. Paul was concerned about not taking advantage of other people as pertaining to taking their money.
Mm-hmm.
And so how is gambling taking advantage of somebody else?
Isn't that the very nature of the beast?
Isn't,
I don't mean that in its rawest sense. Isn't that what it is?
Well, and I'm taking advantage of your greed.
Yeah.
You know, here's a person who has an inordinate desire for money,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to use that to my advantage.
Even if we're not that kind of even if we aren't that person who's doing that, that we're still taking advantage of the person that is that person.
I'm willing to do that.
Yeah.
I'm willing to take that away from you. You know, so you might visualize the casino, if we're going to put it in that context, a little bit more of the extreme context. Each person is sitting at the table. And this person's willing to put at risk what he has, but he doesn't want to lose, to entice the other person who's willing to put at risk what he has, but he doesn't want to lose. My opponent's greedy. He's a silver lover, and he wants to gain. I'm willing to exploit that.
Even if you're just there just to have fun?
Even if you're there for that.
Just entertainment.
You're going to take from that man. It doesn't matter your motive. You are willing to take advantage of that man, to take what he has.
I hadn't seen those verses in that light, what you said there about not for covetousness. That's interesting. That perspective, because I had, you know, in Colossians 1, it says to walk in a manner worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing Him, bearing fruit in every good work and increasing in knowledge of God, bearing fruit in every good work.
Okay.
Well, what you just talked about, for a Christian, how does that fit that picture? I don't think that's a piece of the puzzle that fits in that picture.
Okay.
That idea of what you just talked about.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
When Jesus said, you know, in everything, therefore, treat people the same way that you want them to treat you, it's hard for me to see Jesus exploiting someone because of their greed to take something that belongs to them, and he's going to take that for himself. Even if I just say, I just did it for fun, I don't think you can just because something is fun, we said that earlier, culture says, this just is entertaining, but that doesn't make it right.
Mm-hmm.
I think those principles, you know, that God put together.
I don't know if I've got this in my list or not. I keep going when we talk about our nature and what we're supposed to be, not our nature, but who we're supposed to be. You know, Galatians 2:20, I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me.
Yeah.
And the life that I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. If Christ is living in me, and we're supposed to be, you know, Galatians talks about us being baptized into him, 3:27, I think, if I'm right. You know, if we're in him and he's in us, and we're supposed to be thinking like him, would he have anything to do with any of this?
Yeah.
Or would he avoid it completely? You know, if we're trying to think like Jesus,
mm-hmm.
Would he have any part of this?
Uh-huh.
And we've got to think about those things.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Anyway,
I want to give you an example of somebody. You ever thought about anybody in the Bible who was willing to put at risk what he had to take advantage of somebody on the chance he might be able to take advantage of something somebody else had?
Think
of anybody who placed a bet in the Bible?
I'm sure when you say it, I'll know, but I don't know off the top of my head. But I'll probably never forget it now. What are you thinking about?
Look at a guy named Samson.
Okay.
I'm going to flip back just for a second to his
very good
his story. And he's a judge.
Yep.
I want to tell you that not always were those in the Bible that God used savory characters.
Mm-mm.
Sometimes he had to use people that were not all that he wanted them to be to accomplish his purpose.
And I heard Jerry Fisher say something the other day that I need to stop and think about. He says, if you think that God is using you to help people, don't assume automatically that he's pleased with who you are. Because of what you just said.
Okay.
So he did use people to accomplish his needs.
Yeah.
regardless of sometimes what kind of person they were,
yeah.
but they did his bidding for him at the time. So we got to think about those things. But anyway, go ahead.
That's right.
Is it 14?
So, yeah, chapter 14 yeah. tells the story of this. You remember that Samson placed a little bet on that some guys couldn't figure out his riddle. He had married a girl down in a city called Timon in the Philistines, and he was on his way back, and he encountered a lion. That was the story as he was traveling back, and he killed this lion, and on the return trip, he found that in the carcass of that lion, a swarm of bees had. Mm-hmm. Put some honey in there, had developed some honey. So look at with me in just a second. Let's start in verse 8.
Yeah.
When he returned later to take her, this woman that he was going to marry, he turned aside to look at the carcass of a lion, and behold, a swarm of bees and honey were in the body of the lion. So he scraped the honey into his hands and went on and ate it as well as he went. And when he came to his father and mother, he gave them some of that and they ate it. He didn't tell them that he had scraped the honey out of the body of a dead lion. And then his father went down with the woman to Samson, and Samson made a feast there, for the young men customarily did this. And when they saw him, they brought 30 companions to be with him. Samson said to them, let me now propound a riddle for you. And if you will indeed tell it to me, within 7 days of the feast, and find it out, then I will give you 30 linen wraps and 30 changes of clothes. But if you're unable to tell me, then you shall give me 30 linen wraps and 30 changes of clothes. And they said to him, propound your riddle that we may hear it. So here's the riddle. He says, out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet. So here's Samson, and he says, let's just do a little bet. You know, I'm going to throw this out here for you, and let's see if you can figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
If you win it. If you get it, then you win these 30 changes of garments. And if you don't, then I win. So he played a little game with them. And, you know how that turned out. Well, they went after his wife and convinced her to convince him to give up what the answer to that was. And so when we get down to verse 18, the men of the city said on the seventh day, before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey and what is stronger than a lion? Mm-hmm. Of course, Samson knew what they'd been up to and that they had wrung that out of his wife. And so...
Not the most favorable response, and you've plowed with my heifer.
Yeah. yeah, this is Samson.
Maybe we'll go back to choosing a spouse wisely on another show, but
yeah,
go ahead.
Well, and so Samson has a debt to pay. So how does he pay his debt since he lost the bet? Well, it says he went down to Ashkelon, verse 19, and killed 30 of them and took their spoil and gave the changes of clothes to those who told the riddle.
Okay.
He should actually pay his debts off out of his own pocket. He just killed some people and took their clothes and gave it to them. And even Samson, ironically, this is just kind of strange, but down in chapter 15, verse 3, later when... he was angry about losing his wife. His father gave her away to some other man. Samson said to the guys, this time I shall be blameless in regard to the Philistines when I do this to them. So even as Samson looked back on what he did in that previous episode, even he knew that was not, that was kind of a shady thing to do. So, yeah, do we do what? Well, do we say, well, Samson did it, so if Samson can bet, I can bet.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think so. But say, yeah, you know, you see that a lot of things that Samson did in these stories that were wrong. But
interesting. The principle, though, of motive and what, why, and what's behind our actions, and we have to consider those things.
And being willing to take advantage of someone else. You know, the lottery always advertises $1 million or $3 million or whatever to the winner. But, of course, there's always $3 million $1 losers involved in that. And so, you know, here I am, and I'm going to capitalize on a man's desire to acquire more.
Yep.
You know, I don't think about the losers when I play these games. Because since they're willing to engage in the game, that somehow makes it okay.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to exploit that to take something for myself.
Well, this whole concept that the house always wins.
And it usually does.
Yeah, always. I don't care if there's somebody wins a 2018 Corvette someday. That's happened.
Yeah.
I know people have done that. House still wins.
Yeah.
Who's really profiting from this?
Right.
On big picture,
right.
why are they running the lottery?
Yeah.
It's not for those winners.
Right.
It's for the house.
That's right. Yeah.
From that standpoint,
yeah,
they're not doing this as nonprofit.
No.
Trust me.
No, they're
not.
Take money and yeah.
But that's side of it. But that's different than the office pool and the raffle at the basketball game and those kind of things. And so we have to come down to what on that? I mean, where
well, I think even in those things, you know, again, I judge it based on principle, not just an overall condemnation of whatever the game is that's being played. I think I need to ask the question, in this game that I'm considering participating in, am I in that willing to take advantage of someone else and exploit someone else who's involved in something? Is it a violation of a principle? So I think rather than just being condemning in a general way any kind of pool or any kind of game, I think I always have to go and say, you know, is this going to be involved me taking advantage of and exploiting another person, even at you know, at his expense, so I can have some fun?
Yeah.
So I think those things have to be, I think just rather than...
We have to consider the way the situation we're in.
Yeah.
And could this boil down to, just thinking out loud, a evaluation of your conscience and what you're doing? I mean, is this something that I should, you know... Because you think about a basketball raffle. You know, the money that's given goes to whatever cause. And, you know, if somebody... If they do draw the number and somebody makes the half-court shot and wins $50... That's fine, but you know, maybe nobody does it. So all that money goes to that good cause. You know, that it goes to whatever, I don't know, whatever they're raffling for that night. Can a Christian do that in good conscience? And that's something I think we have to weigh that. I guess at some point we have to stand on our own 2 feet and weigh the situation and decide, is this conscientiable to do? On each activity, would you think that would be fair to say that? Or,
well, again, I think you can't let it being a good cause to be the justification.
Because here's what I've done.
Causes, you have to look at what you're actually doing and participating in and ask if you're violating any of these principles we're talking about.
Yeah, and that's important. I don't, because people say, well, it's a good cause. What can possibly be wrong? That's the motive. Well, it's for a good cause.
Right.
And so is it just a matter of conscience?
Right. You know, it's funny that even the government, who donates the sin tax money to good causes, they even see that there's a taintedness about what's going on, because they have to emphasize the good cause. Look at all the money going to help support the scholarship. Look at all the money going to education. Because they know that you can't go back and say, well, prostitution's okay, you know, because even though you're taking some of the tax money or gambling, or, you know, gambling is intrinsically good, the games are good, because of the good cause. They have to emphasize the good cause.
Yeah.
Because they even they have things called the vice squad that exists in different cities to deal with gambling and prostitution and all these different vices. But just because the money that they get from those things goes to a good cause, it doesn't make the things right.
Yeah, I just want people thinking, as we approach it, like I said, I don't expect this radio program to change somebody's heart right off the, you know, immediately. But hopefully they'll think and go back and look at these verses and study for themselves and spend time, rather than making a quick decision, well, it's a good cause, it's just good. Take the time to consider what the Bible does say. Because I think you started earlier, you know, sometimes we just do things because, you know, we don't see anything wrong with it.
Or everybody else is doing it.
Yeah, I mean, and so
he was
as a Christian, though, we need to slow down just a little bit and say, okay, is this something I need to be partaking in?
Yeah.
Or is this something I should be participating in?
Yeah.
And I don't know that we just assume it's okay and we don't think about it.
Well,
I think a lot of people are there.
That's right. And I mean, forget, I think Matt mentioned this earlier. He's like, if you're in the office and everybody is participating in a pool towards something, and you're going to be the lone ranger that doesn't do it, you know, do you do it because you don't want to be the Lone Ranger, or do you actually have to ask those questions and say, well, you know, is there an issue? Should I stand apart from this because there's an issue?
And, you know, maybe part of that, you know, what if it's a big lottery thing and they do win and 30 people get to split $30 million? Wouldn't you look stupid not being part of that? Or should that even be in the conversation? Should that, you know, is that even part of the conversation for a Christian?
And if you do win, you kind of forget about all the, you're one of those 30 winners that split that pool, but you forget about all those people you were willing to exploit who lost that in order to participate in that pool. So, are you okay with that? Exploiting others, taking advantage of other people's maybe greed to benefit yourself? And do you ever think about that?
Well, you just tell them, I want to remain anonymous. That way nobody knows I won. No, I'm just kidding.
Right.
You know, I've heard people do that too.
Right.
Because they know there's some kind of stigma. They don't want to be associated with it, but they still participate.
That's right.
I'm just trying to throw things out for people to think about and study about and consider in your walk with Christ.
And you had some passages there too that you'd written.
Well,
the Ephesians passage or something that you wanted to.
It was just kind of those same thing. You know, we've been called to this idea in Ephesians 4 and 5 about walking worthy of the calling.
Yes.
That idea. That is what are some things I had down. Let me see. In Ephesians 4:1, it says, I therefore, a prisoner of the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called, which you talked about being called out of darkness into the light earlier, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. You know, we're called to walk worthy of Christ being on that cross.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to, and not just with gambling, we need to consider everything we're doing and how we're doing it. If we're gonna claim him as our king and our example, we've got to consider what we're doing. And not just with gambling, but everything. Is this worthy of him coming to earth to die for?
Yeah.
Is it worthy of it? And, you know, I've got to admit, I've been involved in some things that's not worthy of that.
Right.
And I think, you know, and that comes up, that idea of walking worthy. In the second power part of Ephesians, it comes up at least three times of walk. And in fact, it even says one time, don't walk this way, but walk this way. And that idea of walking worthy of the calling and walking worthy of Jesus. And I you know, is it something that professes, you know, the idea, you know, he encourages I've got this version here too, he encourages women to dress in such a way that professes godliness. I've got it in here somewhere. Is what we're doing professing godliness? Not just how we dress, but what music are we listening to? You know, what do we do for entertainment? That whole idea of, is this going to, when people find that I'm doing this, is it going to profess godliness?
Gotcha. Yeah.
That idea, but anyway, that's you've still got lots of notes.
No, I was you're in Ephesians, and so I was following your train of thought in chapter 5.
Yeah,
and this caught my attention too.
What verse?
Chapter 5 and verse 5.
Yeah,
when he's listing things that would not reflect a walk of love.
Mm-hmm.
For God and for others, he says, for this you know with certainty that no immoral or impure person or covetous man who is an idolater has an inheritance in the kingdom of God or a kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no one deceive you. And he goes on and says some other things. I found it interesting that among the sins, when he would list various sins, when he comes to covetousness, links that to idolatry. So why would you do that? Why of all those sins would you link covetousness to idolatry? What would that be, the connection?
That is interesting. You know, what is an idol, I guess, is the next question then. And is that something we worship in place of God or between us and God?
Yeah.
And so when we value something that much, are we placing it between us and God?
Yeah.
And it becomes our idol.
Yeah. And, you know, you think about when it comes to down to crunch time and you're presented with two different options, Sometimes those options are, am I going to listen to the voice of God in making my choice, or I'm going to listen to the voice of money, which is going to make, and somebody has, I think about a lot of times we're offered, people are offered opportunities for different kind of jobs, and especially someone who's graduated from college and he has this great opportunity, and here's two different companies who would love to have him.
Yeah.
And one guy, one company says, I'll pay you $50,000 if you'll come and work for me. And another company in another city offers the guy $80,000 or more. And I'm going to decide my, how am I going to decide which, where I'm going to, which direction I'm going to go? Maybe it would come, there would be a, an issue where in this city, there's plenty of opportunities to worship with Christians. In another city where I can get $80,000, there may be no churches. Yeah. So what's going to speak to me? The voice of God, that, or is the voice of money going to call my attention? I mean, there's a crunch time.
Maybe Lot's example.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, that's the same. That's where he was. And that's certainly biblical. What you just said is absolutely biblical principle of where do we go based on what's available to us.
Right.
So
there was a man who called me when I lived in New England and
you've lived a lot of places.
And said his daughter, he wanted his daughter to go to a college that was in New Hampshire, and I lived in New Hampshire, and he said, so is there a church around there? And I knew that there were no congregations really in that area, and I said, no, there aren't. And so he really struggled with that. He really wanted to know what I would do. And I said, well, it was very hard for me because I'm making a, he's asking me to make a judgment on what he would do with his daughter. And I said, well, for me, I said, I would not want to, well, I'm sending a powerful message if I send my daughter to that college.
Yeah.
Because I'm saying to her that that is most important. Mm-hmm. Your education, your future success, these things are what matter.
Yeah.
And you'll get, maybe some other time you'll be where you can worship with Christians, but right now that's what matters. And it was way out of, he said, well, can somebody go and get her and bring her to church? I said, we live 2 hours away. So I said, I think you're going to have to make that choice based on principle, based, and that was really hard for him, but it was a good example of there was two voices calling to him, you know, success and money and all that for his daughter, and
listening to God.
Listen to God. And so that's a really hard decision that people have to make every day. Yeah. I thought about, again, going back to Luke chapter 16, where Jesus talked about the Pharisees.
Dude, we got 4 minutes. Can you believe? We have 4 minutes left. Luke, what, 16?
Yeah. Where he said, 16:14, he said, now the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, were listening to all these things and scoffing at him. And the voice, the verse before that, he says, no servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate one and love the other, or else he'll devote to one and despise the other. You can't serve God and wealth. Mm-hmm. So here's that. You know, we're talking about, you know, why would idolatry be linked sometime with covetousness? It's because there's these two different, you know, voices that are calling to you, and you're going to have to choose one or the other. You can't always choose both.
Yeah.
We always like to choose both and want to be able to have them both. But I think it's a test sometimes of what rules our hearts.
Yeah.
And
those are day to day.
Yeah,
For everybody, but especially for Christians, sometimes that's a moment-by-moment, everyday decision-making process. Do I do this? Do I do that? Based on what I'm supposed to be doing and who my example is, what do I do right now? And that's really the idea, I think, when people talk about bearing a cross, for instance. I don't think it's – I've after listening to Paul Earnhardt, people like that, I don't think that means we have this burden that we're packing around all the time, but it's I'm crucifying myself. I'm killing myself on a cross every day to do God's will.
Yeah.
That's the cross we bear. So when we make a decision, what are we basing our decision on? Which voice are we going to listen to?
And that a lot of times involves denying ourselves,
yes.
Picking up our cross.
I believe that very much involves that. Yeah.
And when, you know, it's pretty easy. It struck me the other day, I was doing a lesson from Luke 18. It struck me how easy it is to see these Pharisees as lovers of money and seeing them as idolaters. That's easy to condemn that, see that there. But it's harder when you get to chapter 18 and you see the rich young ruler.
Yeah.
Because he had the same problem that they had.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Jesus, he comes to Jesus and says, good teacher, this is chapter 18 of Luke and verse 18, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? We like him because he asks the right question.
Yes.
And he says, good teacher, and Jesus says, why do you call me good? And he says, well, you know the commandments, and he mentioned several, and he says, well, all these things I've kept from my youth. Well, I think that was genuine.
Yeah.
I think he really did evaluate himself and felt like he had done his best.
Yeah.
And so Jesus knew where his problem lay, and so he said, you know, well, there's one thing you need to do. Go sell all you possess and distribute to the poor. You have treasure in heaven. Come and follow me. And it says, but when he heard these things, he became sad because he was extremely rich.
Yeah.
So we don't like that scenario because that man looks more like us. Because he's a good guy, he mm-hmm. seems genuine, seems to be willing to do whatever's necessary. If you can add one more thing to please to inherit eternal life, but when Jesus says, "Well, what you need to do is deny yourself," the thing that seems to be ruling your heart, he's not willing to do that. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, we're willing to do more things, but to downsize, to give up things, especially if it's our money.
Yeah.
So it's a reflection.
And that, you know, and it's not something Jesus, that he doesn't ask all of us to do that.
No.
But he knew this guy's heart.
Yeah.
And he knew where this guy was. And it's just like God telling Isaiah, he said, you're going to go preach to people, but you're going to go preach to them so they can't listen to you. God gave them an opportunity that they needed to refuse him one more time before he punished them. And that's what he gave him. Jesus gave this guy the opportunity to examine his own heart and make a change.
Yeah.
And he didn't. And he walked away sorrowful. And we don't have to do that.
Yeah.
You know, being a Christian boils down to this. What did God say? We got something?
We're about to wrap it up.
Well, yeah, we're close. But, you know, what did God say? And am I going to do it or not?
Yeah.
That's just, whether we like it or not, I listened to it. Somebody sent me a really good, I need to send it to you, a clip of a guy talking about this idea. And actually, he was talking about homosexuality, which Dan Langford once came on and do a show on that topic. But it boils down to whether we like it or not, if we're going to accept God as God, what did he say, and am I going to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's simple.
And if we're going to be a Christian, we have to accept that we are people who are called out of darkness. Mm-hmm. Into light. And the question we need to ask is not, you know, I don't see anything wrong with it, but we need to say, does the Bible say anything about it?
Yep.
And then what we do needs to reflect his character, his motives, his love for other people. And that's going to affect a lot of things we do. And,
you know, we sing this song, This Little Light of Mine.
Mm.
Yeah. Is that our light? Are we really?
Yeah.
He called us out of darkness into light to reflect his light.
Yeah.
Well, what light are we reflecting? And we have to examine those things. Yeah. You have anything you want to close with?
No, thanks for having me. Appreciate you letting us feel this topic out today.
It's been good. It's been good for me. Matt, you have anything you want to close with or anything you want to say? Or?
Yeah, just to let everyone know, we didn't get audio on our Facebook Live this morning, but we will have a better recording up later this evening or next couple of days. And if you go to make sure you go to Facebook to Scott Mitchell, Let the Bible Speak.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you go to letthebiblespeak.faith, a little bit of podcast will be available there. And you can request some CDs. You want to close it out, Scott?
I just want to encourage people to study their Bibles and examine their own hearts. And I invite people out to Bethel. You know, we start 9:30 in the morning. Come out and I promise you, folks, I will never purposely say anything that's not biblical. We've taken a stand on doing what the Bible says. And what I'm going to encourage you to do right now is just let the Bible speak and let that be your ground for what you do. Thank you all very much. God bless you all. And thank you for being with us, all of you on Facebook and on the radio and whatever else may be out there available that Theron has done that I don't know about. But thank you all very much.
Thanks for listening to WGPRO 89.9, broadcasting from beautiful Marengo, Indiana.
Excellent. Thank you, folks.